This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. Barry's been getting his daily exercise today. We've snapped him just after walking the dog, Rosa. How was the walk? Did you get wet?
No, it didn't rain. It was good. Walking the dog, that's a good bridge term.
Walking the dog, how does that fit?
There's an old expression, walking the dog. Say you've got a hand where you want to be in four spades. You've got a lot of spades. I mean, the normal thing to do is bid one spade. But if you want to try and get doubled in four spades, maybe you should take it a little bit slower and sort of look like you got pushed there and then get doubled and you're going to make it. That's called walking the dog.
Well, I've never heard of that before. You might get a lot of people trying that.
Oh, no, I'm certainly not saying that it's a good idea, because the trouble is you might get passed out in one spade or something and that would be a disaster. So if you're going to play that game, Mariana, you need to know what you're doing and you need to be pretty careful.
So taking the slow route, that's the thing, yep. That you want to get doubled. Oh.
Taking the slow way to four spades is walking the dog.
I'll tell you someone who took the slow way of getting his guaranteed life partner, I guess, his wife to say yes and get married.
Who's that?
Neil Dravitsky. Neil and Mary celebrate their 59th wedding anniversary. Active players in the Waikato Bays region and even national. So congratulations. 59 years of marriage, and Mary did make the comment, it should be really over 60, but I made him wait. Took him a few years before I said yep. I wonder if we could put that down to walking the dog.
Well, you're talking about a long, long road. You probably need to talk about Arch Jelly turning 100 this week too. Pretty impressive.
Oh, yes, and I saw the clip on the news the other day. Fantastic, wasn't it?
Fantastic achievement, 100 years old. And what's more, he just seems as sharp as a tack too. Wouldn't want to get in his way.
How about we give him a ring and see if we can invite him on the show next week? That'll be interesting to talk to Arch.
It would.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
Good morning, Judge Julie. Happy Wednesday.
Yep, you too. Morning, everyone.
We've got an interesting question. We never have boring ones, of course. But anyway, this one is, Wendy Clara is merrily playing away and they don't fully nominate a card, so they just call for the nine. Say there's more than one nine on the table and they call for a nine. What happens, Julie? Who gets to pick which one it is?
Right, okay. So presuming that they're actually in dummy, because this is about the only place this ever comes up, and they are going to be playing from dummy. If they're not following suit to something, so the leader's in dummy and they are playing from dummy and they call a card, there are several things that determine which card is played. The first one is that if it's in the suit that has just been played, that is the card that is played. So okay. If you call a nine and you have the nine of spades in dummy and you won the previous trick with a spade, then the nine of spades is the card that will be played. So it's assumed that you are continuing in the same suit. So that's the first one. If there's two cards and neither of them are the card that was played in the previous trick, then the clearer has to clarify which suit it is that they are going to be playing. No one gets a choice to say, oh, I want dummy to play that card. That doesn't happen.
Can dummy choose?
Dummy's la mort. It's the deads. Dummy's not allowed to do anything except try to prevent the clearer from making an infraction, which we say allows them to say having none in the case of a possible revoke. Or we clarify the timing when the tricks turn the wrong way by the clearer. But that is about the limit that dummy has. Dummy is not allowed to make decisions about what the clearer may or may not be wanting to play. And just to be really clear, that includes having your hand on the table pointing at a card, having your hand moving around across the table so there is an indication as to what card you think should be played, or just playing a card. You're meant to listen to your partner and then play the card that they call for. You're not allowed to hesitate. You're not allowed to look bewildered. You are just there to do what you are told, like any good two-year-old might do.
Let's say they're playing and they've established an offsuit. All the trumps are gone and they're playing that offsuit. And then declarer stops and everybody knows what cards that are left in that suit are all good.
Yep.
Can dummy hover?
No.
And then they can't. And then they can't make any inferences. So what do you do if they suggest keep playing that? Ah, okay.
The problem is that when we are dummy and we have plenty of time to observe what is going on around us, often we will have developed a better idea of what the hand is than perhaps our poor partner who is struggling with what they've got and what they've got to do has managed to achieve. So when we're dummy, often we're a wee bit more aware perhaps that this card is high and that card isn't and those other sorts of things. We are not there to play the hand when we are dummy. That is why the French for la mort, the dead, is actually a really good way of phrasing what dummy is. Dummy is just there to do what they are told and nothing else except try to prevent the clearer from committing an infraction, which is like a revoke or something along those lines, or which hand they are in, or to point out that they've got a card turned the wrong way and there is some timing clarified in the manual about that.
I'm still getting over Julie talking about her poor partner, and I thought, yeah, she does have a poor partner sometimes, but, you know, he's not here today.
not if he's had a bet with anyone recently, that's for real.
Has he been behaving like a very well-behaved two-year-old?
I was not referring to Patrick.
Oh, okay. We didn't think you were, did we, Barry?
I actually think it was a really bad example because two-year-olds are just not good at behaving. And that is true for a lot of dummies I see, okay?
Thank you, Julie. That was very informative.
Okay, have a good week.
The Fullerton Teams was held this week.
Oh, right, this week.
Not too many teams. There were only 12. It was a pretty strong field. Unfortunately, with 12 teams, of course, you get the old over-swissing thing. And at the end, the last round, there were a lot of big wins for some of the teams. Coming out on top were George Masters, Blair Fisher, Fisher Wynn, and Ian Barrington. And I know that I've got your name wrong, Fisher. I keep on trying to get it right. Whatever I do, she always tells me I got it wrong.
You've got to try harder, Barry.
One thing I did notice in the victory photo, man, did she look short in that team.
Oh, right. Yes. I mean, everybody looked short standing next to Blair, 6'11".
George is not that short either, and Ian's a lot taller than Fisher.
Hey, look, just standing there and getting that winning photo, that's pretty good achievement. Well done. Which reminds me, when am I going to see my coin?
Well, I was going to wave it to you over the Zoom, but I haven't got one handy. What's your bridge been going like this week, Mariana?
Travelled to Franklin last night, heading into Club Champs this week, and playing at the Papakura Restricted this weekend. What about you? You doing any damage anywhere?
No, nothing for me this weekend. No, I'll just be looking after the dog and the cows and the horses and the sheep and the cat and the chooks and the ducks.
Any real estate work happening this week?
A bit of real estate work happening as well. Not too much bridge going on just at the moment. I'll be ready for Congress.
We've actually got a team to play in the Wellington event that starts next Monday. The online event, yes.
That'll be good fun. They do a good job. I played in one of those.
Get your gumboots on. We're going down to the pond with Kermit.
Phenomena. Phenomena. Phenomena.
Morning, Kermit. Nice to see you again.
It's lovely to see you both again, too.
She never says that it's nice to see me, Pam. I don't know why that is, but, you know, I think we've been chasing too much of me.
Join the dots. Join the dots.
I've got a question that I've been meaning to ask you, Kermit.
Oh, okay.
Are you ready for it?
I'm ready for it. I'll reserve judgment on whether I answer it. Go.
Doesn't have swear words, does it, Barry?
It doesn't. Okay. You know, when the National Swiss Pairs was on, or before the National Swiss Pairs were on, you were telling us that it's just about your favourite event.
Yep.
And it seems to me like Swiss Pairs are a favourite event with a lot of people. What is it about Swiss Pairs? I mean, they don't give you free cheese or anything. What is it about Swiss that you really like, better than other bridge?
Okay, so my least favourite format of the game is match point pairs. Then it goes rubber, and then teams and Swiss are fairly equal. But I prefer the IMP method of scoring and the tactics around that. And I particularly like Swiss pairs because it's just you and your partner. It's IMPs, and there's another little bit of different strategy in Swiss in that you've got to take into account what is happening across the whole field, not just what's happening at the other table. So if I was playing a Swiss match, I would be thinking slightly different things to whether I was playing in the final of the New Zealand team, so playing a top-level match. It's just slightly different tactics, I think.
But match points pairs is a little bit like that too. You probably need to be thinking what the rest of the room's doing. Would that be fair?
Yes. The thing about match points, I think, is that you can do some pretty wild stuff, and as long as you get more good results from that than bad, you're on the plus side. At IMPs, one wild action can lose the whole match. So in match points, all the boards are created equal. And in IMP scoring, they're not all created equal. And so there's different strategy about how you approach each board.
What do you think, Marianne? You're someone that likes to go wild.
Be quiet. I don't know. I do tend to like Swiss, but I think pairs is my game at the moment.
You do like to go wild. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I am.
But that's what Pam's saying.
God, bridge zone husband.
Because even at the club, Swiss pairs is a popular thing, isn't it? You know, when you have a three-night Swiss pairs event at the club, people seem to enjoy playing in that.
Well, you also get into a rhythm. Like, you play nine boards or whatever against one pair, and you sort of get hunkered down and get into a rhythm instead of, you know, and you're playing against the same pair in the same system, in the same style, and you sort of settle in, and then you can have a break from that and go to your next match. And some people have quite a long break. And some people have got a short break between those matches. Hey, I just want to say to all the people who played tournament against me, and I'm not sure I mentioned this at the time, but when Jack and I played the Swiss pairs about a month ago, it was 20 minutes on the clock when we finished the last match. I just want to get that out there.
What, were you dummy all the time?
How rude.
I think that's what you were sort of alluding to, wasn't it?
There's no doubt about it. Jack plays pretty quick. Anyway, I've got a theory about this.
Yeah, go on then.
You probably both would have thought I would have.
Yeah.
I reckon the reason, like at the club when you're playing Swiss pairs, I think the reason that most people like Swiss pairs, you keep having these matches and you don't have to worry about, well, you do, but you don't have to think, oh, well, we're lying 11th or we're lying 3rd or whatever. You've just got a 9-board match to play against that other pair. And whether that's somebody that you really like or somebody that you really hate, you've got a 9-board match to focus on, and you're just going to try and win each match. So I think, you know, maybe it's breaking it down into those little segments that makes people like it.
I really like that about it, but there's an interesting phenomena we've had. I could be wrong, but it might have applied in some tournaments too, where we didn't really have that many entries for our Swiss pairs. And if you play too many matches, a phenomena happens where it gets over-Swissed. Maybe that's a topic for another time, but when you're playing a Swiss format, you certainly don't want to have nearly as many matches as there are entries. So just thought I'd mention that.
Look, anything that's over the Swiss, I reckon it couldn't be good for your cholesterol, could it, Marianna?
Over Swiss, wow. That's a topic and a half.
Yes, we shall leave for today, I think. Better get going. I've got lots to do this afternoon.
You take care.
Lovely
thanks
to
for that.
Talk to you both.
Join us next week at the Lily Pad.
With Pam Livingston, Bridge Coach.
See you. Phenomena.
The one thing about the game is, how are we looking at increasing the pool of directors, Barry? What do you reckon we should be doing that way?
Wow.
Because it's not about money, is it?
I don't know so much. I mean, I'm not saying we should pay more, but I'm sure if we paid enough, some people would be inclined to direct more, and some people might be interested if they know they get $60 a session or something. At the moment, some clubs don't pay anything, and some clubs pay a pretty minimum amount, really, which would be, we've just talked about it before, they're probably getting paid, well, they are getting paid less than the minimum wage. It's not like they're getting a lot. I don't think offering somebody $20 to come along and work for 3 or 4 hours is really going to attract people along. It would have to be a decent old increase, and I don't think many clubs would probably be prepared to go there.
What about if you paid like a buddy system too, if someone was keen? It's like, yep, come along and offer a little token of appreciation too. Would that... So you're a director. I might be interested in directing. Come along, learn a little bit. What do you think about like a buddy payment system? They're still giving up their time and learning. A little bit more expense, but you might have to pay people twice, even for learning.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the Hamilton Club's sort of been reasonably lucky for the last few years. They've had a few directors, but I know lots of clubs struggling, particularly when you're smaller, it's hard. And you mostly have a playing director, and sure as heck, nobody wants to be a non-playing director when there's only a few tables.
That's correct.
The trouble is anybody who's interested in bridge, most people want to play. They don't want to direct. And if they're not keen on bridge, well, then maybe they're not such a good director either. So it's quite a tough one.
Tell you something, Franklin are about to start their second round of lessons this week. So they host 2 sets of learners' lessons each year. We do too, but we run them at the same time. But they don't. They run one set and then they start another set. Wonder if that's more advantageous doing that, whereas Hamilton provide over the same time period, but a session during the day and a session at night. So it's available for anybody that wants to learn. You can pick and choose day or night. Wonder whether there is an advantage of 2 separate lessons. What do you think?
The thing is that with the way that Hamilton runs it, we have 2 sets of lessons. They're different people, the ones that can come during the day and the ones can play at night. So if we were going to can one of those lessons and have it later in the year, then you'd probably miss out on those people. I mean, in some ways, it would be great to have something that New Zealand Bridge are looking at, is having sort of continuous lessons all throughout the year that people can join in whenever they want to play, because it is a bit of a problem, even if you have them twice a year. If somebody comes to you at the end of the year and you say, oh, well, we don't start till March. And even if you get somebody in, August, you're going to say, oh, gosh, the next lot have already started a month ago and the next one's, it is quite a long time for people to wait if they want to play. It would be good to have an ongoing situation where you could, anybody could start any time.
If you've got any questions, suggestions, or even comments of what Barry and I have been discussing, waffling on a bit, send it in, bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com. But give us your famous tip.
Well, Mariana and I were talking off air, and she found herself in, we found her partner, actually, in one club doubled. Pretty easy to tell you how the auction must have gone. Partner opened a club, it went pass, double, pass, and partner was in one club doubled. I remember Roy telling me once that if the opponents leave a double in at the one level, they've got you. You're in big trouble, and you should probably run. Doesn't come with any guarantees, but it's pretty true. I mean, people will leave a double in at the 2 level, but they're a bit wary about leaving in at the 1 level. They've probably got a lot of trumps, and you are probably in seriously big trouble if they leave a double in at the 1 level.
Roy Patrick Kerr, New Zealand mathematician. I've got one question for you. How did you get to talk to Professor Kerr?
Oh, it would have been at the bridge table, no doubt. One of the nicest guys you'd ever meet, Roy. A fine player, played for New Zealand many occasions. Well, I haven't seen him at the bridge table for a long time. If you're listening to this, Roy, we'd love to see you at the bridge table or anywhere. And Patrick tells a few stories about how when he played with him, talking about walking the dog, Patrick was playing a teams match on BBO with Roy.
Yeah.
And anyway, they're playing away and Roy says, oh, dog's barking, I better let it out. Oh, hang on a minute. And he went away and they all sat there. And Roy was absolutely, the absent-minded professor thing. That was exactly Professor Roy. He was an absent-minded professor. Anyway, they all sat there and waited, tried to ring him, couldn't get hold of him. Nothing happened, never came back, right? And so in the end, they gave up.
Yeah.
Gave up. game, you know. And he was talking to Roy the following week, and he says, "What happened?" He said, "We were all sitting there waiting for him." He says, "Oh, yeah, the dog was barking, and I went to let the dog out, and I thought, I might as well take him for a walk." So he took the dog for a walk. Forgot all about it.
That's a hilarious story. I would never have thought you'd be halfway through a match, dog bark. Okay, right, well, I'll just do this instead.
He forgot that he was playing.
Hey, there's some fresh ideas out there, Barry, about increasing table numbers. Something that's happening in the Waikato, there's a little idea that we're asking for comments on. That's what we're doing. You can fill them all in.
A lot of clubs, and I reckon this might be going on throughout the country, seems to be, you know, some of their nighttime sessions are pretty light on numbers, maybe only three or four tables, which is, you know, not a very good competition, really. If you get one weird result out of four, it means that it's pretty easy to get a bad board or a good one, depending on what they did. So what we're thinking about is, it's probably a lot of clubs around the country that have maybe got three or four tables. We're talking about the Waikato here particularly. But so what if, you know, three or four or five clubs banded together and ran an online session, which a lot of clubs are doing, and ended up with four times three or four times, and, you know, 12, 16 tables would make for a pretty good competition, wouldn't it, Mariana, don't you think?
Yeah, it would. So just merging everybody for one session instead of three or four or five clubs ticking along with three tables each. So that does seem to be something that we should be thinking about.
Well, the worst part out about it is when you're only getting three or four tables, you know, I think some people are a bit less inclined to come along.
Yeah.
And, you know, your numbers might drop further. Whereas if you could get 12 or 15 tables, you know, it gives, and I mean, you could still, I don't know exactly how this is all going to work, Mariana, but you think different clubs could still run their own competition amongst their own members, scored on that with that big session?
Yeah, just take their score out. Yeah. Well, anything is better than nothing. And I think anything that is going to promote and enhance people's or players' enjoyment of the game should be looked at. So, yeah, I'm in favour of having a look to see whether or not, because it's more enjoyable talking to a lot of people rather than, you know.
I mean, there is already X Club, although that's scored across a lot of players. You obviously don't get to play necessarily against other players. It's just, even though you can do a howl, you still only get to play if you've got four tables. Hey, let's face it, the most pairs you're going to get to play is seven, isn't it? That's not that great. It would be great to have, even if you had anywhere from sort of 10 tables upwards, you all of a sudden you have quite a good competition.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
We'll see what comes of it. Always people out there with some bright ideas.
We carry on with a short segment from the Aces and Knaves documentary. Does it sound too heavy being a top player? Let us know. BridgeZoneShuffle@gmail.com.
So in bridge, there are some bridge players who are naturals. The cards just fly off their hands. They do the right thing without thinking. They often can't explain why they've done it. When I talk to Stevie Weinstein about what he's thinking during bridge, he says he can see the cards in his head. And when the cards are played, he deletes pictures of them.
In my head, in bridge, the cards actually are moving around. And I'm like, the seven of diamonds, the five of clubs, the four of spades. The four of spades took a long time. Why did he play the four of spades slow? Why was he play this fast? The unseen cards are just like flying around. It's sort of like the dog that didn't bark, like the Sherlock Holmes story. Why didn't the dog bark? Why did the dog bark? Why did he bark then? If you're on your game and you're playing well, you can usually put it together and finish the story with a happy ending.
When I first started playing bridge, for many years, I was at best mediocre. And then all of a sudden, one day, it was almost as if a curtain had lifted and I could see it all clearly. And it was an amazing feeling.
And I'm processing like a million data points a minute, going through everything as fast as I can, and I'm sure a lot that I don't even think about, I'm thinking about subconsciously.
Humans are just unbelievable. If they do something enough times, that so many aspects of it become automatic, that then you're really able to think very quickly about the different bids and what you know about the different hands.
I think they call it lateral thinking. It's a bit of psychology. How can I get into the guy's mind? I think why I think like that was I played mostly a lot of money bridge when I started. We used to play for very high stakes. One day I won about $40,000 or $50,000 in an afternoon. You know, what you learned is how to adjust to the thinking of the person in front of you. When I was young, I used to go out with Omar Sharif. He was a great friend of mine. I once asked him, you know, Omar, can you get me like a part in one of your movies, get me some extra work or something? He says, look, smart guys play bridge. You know, only idiots do movies. He said, I do movies so I can afford to play bridge. Don't worry about it.
I was making my first Egyptian film, and I hadn't realized that making films meant that there was so much time wasted while people were putting the lights in the right places and the cameras and all that, hours spent between takes. And I picked up an old dusty thing in the studio, book, and it turned out to be Gorin's book about bridge, that fat one.
He was a charming man, very brilliant guy. He spoke five languages, he was educated, he was literate. He played very nice bridge, and he could speak on any subject. And I would kind of wander around with him here and there and play tournaments in south of France or Sardinia or whatever it was.
A stylish setting for this top competition. 16 pairs from all over the world take part and come by invitation only.
People would be dressed in dinner jackets. There'd be people sitting around, and much more elegant. The game was played in a much better spirit. I know there'd be 20 women standing behind them. We didn't know anything about bridge, you know, just gaping and gawking and thing. And sometimes at the end, you know, the number 19 would go and have dinner with me, so I didn't mind. Possibly my greatest strength is I'm a winner. You could be a winner without being the most technically sound, but somewhere at the end of the day, you're in the winner circle. It's like a bit of luck, a bit of knack, a bit of whatever it is.
Confidence is such a huge part of this game, and when your confidence is beaten down, it's so hard to play well. It's really important to be positive, not show too many signs that you're losing.
There's an element of poker and bridge. There's no bridge in poker. Why they're playing certain cards, I can usually figure out what their mind's thinking, and that gives you a little bit of an edge.
For 20 years, I've played at top level in bridge. There are not many players that I really fear or feel that, okay, they maybe see something more than you see. Maybe one or two players in the world. No Americans, no.
Top bridge players don't generally lack for self-confidence, so, you know.
Don't mean to sound like I have a huge ego, but we are so good at bridge. It's so hard to get to our level. I've got 15 years of constant playing and week in, week out under my belt. There's about 40 really good teams, 150 to 200 great players, world-class players.
I think bridge should be taught in schools. It's a mini course of statistics, economics, applied mathematics, logic.
You can be as smart as you want, and you can be as talented as you want at bridge, but if you're not actually devoting a couple of years of your life to it, at some point at a young age, their brains sponge it up. That's why people don't start bridge at 30 and 40 and become the best player in the world.
Happy bridging, everybody. Take care, and we will catch you next week.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international, nationwide.
Thanks for listening to this Free FM podcast. If you want to hear more content like this, you can support Free FM via Patreon. Head to patreon.com/freefm89 to find out more.